Thanks for listening to Shift Your Spirits. I'm Slade Robertson. For 13 years, I've been a professional intuitive and personal development blogger. I try to talk about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives in a program called Automatic Intuition. It is Sunday, February 10th, 2019, as I record this introduction. This week, I have a travelogue / paranormal memoir to share with you about my Airbnb, which was haunted, and about a major parking angel's miracle that occurred on an airport tarmac, and that's coming up in just a few minutes. As always, there's an oracle segment at the end of the show, so be thinking about a question or a concern you have. Hold it in your mind. I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra channeled message. In personal / business news, I'm always seeking to experiment with my own life here and report it back to you. What I observe, what works for me. I used to think that no one would want to hear me talk about my creative process so much or my experience as an entrepreneur, what it's like to run an online business, because, well, there's like a ton of that all over the internet, right? But I do get a lot of correspondence from you guys reminding me how many of you are my peers, are attempting to either build or run similar content-driven businesses. So I'm encouraged to keep sharing this particular kind of behind-the-scenes information. By all means, let me know what you like, what resonates with you, what you want more of, and I'll do my best to incorporate that, especially into my personal intro segments. Remember this time last year, the beginning of 2018, I mentioned that I was going to try not doing to-do lists for the year, like of any kind, not even my normal 3x3 strategy. I was just going to kind of freestyle it, was the word that I used. Just do those things that rise up in priority in the moment or things that are in my immediate consciousness and kind of do things more spontaneously or things that really require that attention. So I have to say that that relaxed kind of in the moment, in the flow attitude seemed to be really good for manifesting money, or else I just had a really good year financially. But I felt like it really was the result of kind of focusing on my creativity, putting the work out there, building a community, letting go of the reins and letting things kind of just organically grow and do what they wanted to do and not try to like control everything so much. I do feel like if you believe in manifesting abundance, that that is the right sort of attitude and posture to have to bring more of that into your world. But that is not a good style for me for moving projects along. Oh my God, there are so many things that I plan to implement in 2018 that never saw the light of day. I mean, they didn't move along one single step. So I am going back to the 3x3 strategy. That's how I make things happen. It's not complicated, and I think that there might be a middle ground where I can go back to doing the 3x3 strategy, but then sort of day-to-day living in the moment, bring some of that relaxed attitude forward at the same time. See if I can kind of just color the 3x3 with that vibe. Anyway, I will link to the episodes where I've talked about the 3x3 strategy in detail if you guys want to incorporate that as your own kind of business planning to-do list. I think it works in both your personal life and your business life, actually. So if there are goals that you have, the 3x3 strategy is the way for me that I make everything happen. And last year I didn't do it and I didn't make as many things happen. So yeah, I'll give you a link to check that out. Before I forget, I do want to say a quick thank you to my newest supporters on Patreon, Sue Brassel and Alana Brennan. Find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show, and access all the extra bonus content. Please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. And thank you to all of you who continue to pledge your support. People ask me all the time about seeing things. in particular, seeing things that you wouldn't want to see. I forgot what that was like. I've built up my psychic security over the course of about a decade now. I've layered protocol on top of protocol, upgrade after upgrade, bug fixes, new commands and features. It became pretty solid, to the point that I don't think about it or worry about it that much, not consciously. And I'm not trying to brag. I don't mean to sound cocky about it. It's just my everyday way of being. I can't walk around seeing scary stuff every day. There was a time when I saw spirits everywhere. Every turned off electronic, every blackened monitor or TV screen just made me shudder. I've told some of those stories about the haunted house on Daniel where I lived when I had my stroke, where I called in the spirits to try to help heal myself, and I opened this door, I flipped this switch. And I've talked about my Secret Service detail, my guardians who protect me, and the orders that I give them, and how I orchestrate all that. And I got there slowly as a result of doing this work, doing readings for other people. And also, a part of it came from moving back to the home that I grew up in. The energy in my mother's house is unbelievably quiet. Seth calls it the hush. People become sleepy just being in my mama's house. My brother and sister-in-law complain that the lighting is too mellow. And after my parents divorced and my brother moved away, my dad and my brother both sort of took their love of overhead lighting and loud televisions with them. Growing up, my dad stayed up weird hours. You'd come downstairs in the middle of the night and all the overhead lights would be on, really bright, and he'd be talking on the phone and pacing, having deep conversations or counseling sessions with his brothers and his friends. My mama and I, however, together with our cats, cast a spell of calm in our homes. We both read a lot. We watch things at low volume. I listen to everything with earbuds, so it's very quiet when I'm watching TV. And we have very long, drawn-out come-down rituals and lots of ramped-down levels of disconnecting and relaxing. And I think this has a lot to do with creating the hush. But I also remember when I was 14 and my parents were looking at houses to buy, and the first time I entered that house, it had that hush. I believe it's the main reason we chose it. It was immaculately clean and quiet, and it always has been. So the hush was a spell I incorporated into my psychic security. Your guides are archetypes. They're programs. You have the power to code them, to hack them, to make them work as you need them to. You demand it. You talk to them. You describe it out loud. You talk to yourself in the car, in the mirror. You visualize it as you're lying down at night. And again, when you wake up first thing in the morning, you visualize yourself as a sun, the sphere of your energy growing and expanding. My hush, my invisibility spells, my glamours, my security perimeter, it's pretty powerful. It's huge. It's like a supernova relative to my aura. I use invisibility to hide the security itself, so this strange pillow I'm carrying around doesn't smother other people who are around me, and it helps to make me seem more normal to strangers in cafes. I have been told that I am simultaneously unapproachable and that I have a calming effect on people. And that's just what I've been told. I don't necessarily believe either one of those things, and I can see both of them a little bit. Anyway, when I went to this workshop last month, it had been a long time since I'd raised the portcullis and dropped the drawbridge over the moat, pulled back the invisibility glamour and thinned my veils. But I was in this workshop with beginners. There were several people who were just learning to feel energy, to cut their cords, and I was concerned about blocking them or making them think that they were doing something wrong if they were partnered with me in an exercise. And I kept telling my guardians, I kept going to the bathroom and saying, please let them in, let them work on me, because it doesn't instantaneously happen. Their protocols are meant to protect me from my own bad decisions. So I spent a lot of time that weekend, in preparation for that trip, and then during the trip, negotiating, taking down that security, and then how we would bring it back up again. And there was a danger, of course, that other stuff might get through. You kind of can't have it both ways. Although, if you do this kind of work, you can use a pink light shielding technique. A lot of security acts as a blindfold when what you really require is something more along the line of sunglasses. As I'm talking about that, I'm thinking I'll put a link in the show notes for that psychic shielding technique if you want to check that out. Finding that correct modulation takes a while, and there are always exceptions you run across that you haven't accounted for in advance. So my Airbnb in Chicago was in a building from the 1910s. I have some kind of particular connection to that time period and to apartments from that era. I wrote a whole novel about an apartment in Athens, Georgia, built in either 1927 or 29. I'd have to check the date in the book to remember which one it is. That book is called Cloud Busting by Eric Slade, if you're interested. My fiction is written under a pen name. But the apartment in Cloud Busting and many of the paranormal occurrences there are, you know, semi-autobiographical. So this Airbnb was that kind of apartment. It was that same kind of building, the Chicago Oak Park version of one of those buildings from that era. It had the same kind of woodwork and stained glass. That actually was in the only house that I've ever bought in my lifetime, had that same era of woodwork and plaster. And I did sort of manage to get my security down, you know, after kind of working on it. But once I did, the ghosts started to come out of the woodwork. And I forgot how scary that is. I think a lot of people are scared by their own guardians, their own angels and guides. If you've awakened and felt an imposing presence in the room, did you ever think that might be your entity that's protecting you? And it's being scary to all the things that aren't able to get near you. But that present in the room and that thing looming over you at the end of your bed actually may be your guard. I feel bad because people ask me to tell them how to reverse all this and to clear a house, but I don't clear houses. I don't even try to take the sun out of the sky. I just use blackout drapes and sunglasses. I don't really clear space. I clear my senses, I guess. And maybe that does have an effect on my environment. Maybe I'm sending out instructions that are augmented by some type of entity able to alter physical reality. You know, guardian angels, protectors. They're not just whispering and floating around. They actually have the ability to move shit, you know, out of the way. They can shove you out of the way of an oncoming bus and stuff, you know. They control flow and the interaction of physical bodies on this plane. So, but here's the thing. I'm not clearing the house. I have a very elaborate code that communicates with them, and then they handle all that stuff. So it's kind of hard to know how to teach someone to do that for themselves. Most people kind of don't have a big enough ego, I found. And I will admit to having an ego that allows me to boss angels around. Maybe my spells and visualizations are kind of amplified by them. I think of it more like I'm a symphony conductor. You know, I'm not really bossing them around so much as I'm playing that role of holding the baton and they're part of that team, and you know, but they're making the music happen. I'm not. I'm just directing it. I honestly don't know. You know, I don't know how it works. I don't know for sure. I don't know what I believe. I have theories, and sometimes it takes talking about it like this to even really put it into words. But I'm just kind of swimming around in it, moving through, experimenting, and sort of wondering about it. I had a friend from Chicago come over by the Airbnb and hang out for a little while. And he picked up on the spirits without knowing any of what I just told you. And this is not a spiritually inclined, particularly psychic kind of person. At least not knowingly so. He doesn't identify with that. And he kept whispering when he was over at my apartment and then apologizing for this impulse he had to keep his voice down. And he just said, you know, I feel like there are people in the other room that I don't want to hear listening to me. And he kept wanting to check the kitchen because he just swore that there was someone in the apartment. I know, I kept telling him, I know, but there's nobody in there. We're perfectly safe. And he still wanted to check. And I encouraged him to. I was like, it's okay. I don't think you're crazy. I know what's happening. It is happening. He kept saying, you know, I swear I hear someone. I can feel them standing there around the corner. And I said, I know. I really do. It's okay. You can go look. I've looked a few times myself. We eventually had to leave and go to his apartment in up sort of north of the city for the rest of the evening. And when I did return alone, holy shit, the place was crawling with shadows. Surfaces were crawling with light. They were swarming that space. They were just crashing it. I got really sleep deprived, which just shreds that veil for me. There's nothing that pierces the veil and thins the skin and lowers the protection more than being sleep deprived for me. And I was stressed by everything that happened regarding the workshop, which I talked about last week on another podcast. And I was having a hard time getting it all back together. I was just reacting. I was in this raw state of outrage. And it's hard to get control when you're like in the thick of being bombarded with all that sensory stuff. And every time I moved from one room to the other, entities would step back into the shadows or would lurch around a corner to evade me or duck back into a closet or flee down the hall. It went on and on. They just kept startling me. I was so jumpy and I knew it was happening, but it still kept taking my breath away, just like managing to surprise me by the sheer force of the feelings or the visions. I was like talking out loud to myself, like, oh my God, look at that. Look at you. They made my skin crawl, but I wasn't existentially frightened or afraid for my safety or anything like that. They weren't evil. They were just spirits, and all the echoes were coming off the woodwork in waves. They were coming through the stained glass, off the snow, which covered like 90% of the view outside. And you think you see shadows in the dark. Oh, the snow. Oh my God. The visions I see against the snow, white on white, translucence and phosphorescence. I was tripping on all of it hard. And I felt like I was watching a screensaver on the walls in the air. It was so fantastic. I couldn't take my eyes away from it. And I stayed up most of the night kind of watching it and observing it and talking to it, packing a little bit, pausing to regard a particular noise or creepy crawly thing that was passing through. And mostly I was just starting to feel a real sense of like, okay, I want to leave this space. I wanted everything to go back to normal. I thought that the airport would sort of start to button me back up. I'd be alone in my head a lot while traveling, but also bombarded by people and sort of that tense environment. I felt like it would trigger me to sort of automatically start to close some stuff back up. you know, slam some doors back into place. And I was just still too open. And a part of me was enjoying it. Because like I said, I was like, ooh, I haven't been creeped out by this in so long. I forgot what this was like. It's kind of cool. My everyday life is nothing like that. I don't see things all the time, you know? So it was a long ride to the airport through the snow. And this young dad who drove me was so kind and open. And he had such a sweet personality. And he was a real talky Lyft driver. And I sort of stayed open to engage with him. I didn't want to shut down on him, you know. And I got through security and I thought, okay, well, there was the end of kind of all the tense parts. The tension can sort of start to leave me now. I'm here. I'm, you know, at my gate. I'm going to get on my plane. I can meditate. I can concentrate. I can pull myself together. Every hoop I jumped through in the airport was like a step closer to normal, I hoped. And then I was finally in my seat and we were ready to go, slowly taxiing. No, maybe starting to taxi. The snow was really coming down. And we were kind of racing an incoming blizzard to get up and out of the sky, away from Chicago and on towards Charlotte, North Carolina. And then the captain said we'd been stopped. We were next to take off, but they needed to wait for the temperature to warm up 1 degree in order for the de-icing machines to work. The weather had dipped just 1 degree, and we waited an hour on the runway for the temperature to rise back up 1 degree so they could de-ice again. And we waited as they de-iced the wings, and then finally we were able to get off the ground before everything froze again. And we had to really sort of race to get in the sky before the temperature dropped 1 degree or the ice reformed or whatever. I've never heard a plane make that much noise. And I know some of you who are listening for a fact have been or are flight attendants. I've never heard that kind of noise. It made me think of the sound that the woods make when they're groaning under the weight of like all those frozen boughs and branches. It was like that sound, but mutated into something really loud and mechanical. I've never been afraid to fly. My mother's brothers were Navy pilots in the Korean War. They built these little kit airplanes, like little Volkswagen Bugs with wings, like old Jeeps, really, with doors that were little more than these metal frames sort of wrapped in plasticized cloth. I was taken up into those planes, just big enough for four people, from the time I was old enough to remember. And my dad was in the Air Force, and I have these little flight log books that are done in my name from when I was a toddler. And some of the pilots like logged flight hours with me, I guess. And I was never afraid to fly. I honestly can't remember a time in my life when I didn't fly on planes. I don't do it super often, but it goes all the way back to infancy. As we were taking off under this horrible groan, I thought of the plane in Hawaii that I was on that was like 75% angel therapy people. And we were all kind of joking about it being the safest plane in the world at that moment. And here I was on this plane and I thought, oh shit, I'm the only person on this plane who is talking to their guides other than maybe the pilots. And I could just feel it. And I felt really weak. And I felt scared, like this new kind of scared. I realized how helpless my guardians might be to protect me in this circumstance. Like I wanted to stand up like a crazy person and be like, everyone, contact your angels immediately. You know, like call them in. It was the roughest flight that I've ever been on. The weather was horrible. The turbulence was insane. I don't know how someone who hates flying or, you know, is afraid to fly wasn't just screaming at the top of their lungs. Like, I can't believe that no one else was freaking out. Maybe they were up in first class somewhere where I was in the back of the plane. And I got vertigo as the plane was coming down in Charlotte. Now, I've never experienced motion sickness in my life. And I apologize to everyone who ever complained in my presence about getting car sick, because I thought you guys were being weenies. Like, a lot of women in my family have to ride in the passenger seat or they get motion sickness. I didn't know. I did not know how horrible it felt, like that motion sickness feeling. I thought I was going to die from that sensation of vertigo. It wasn't the G-force as much as an inability to sense where up or down was. Gravity was like offline, but at the same time, completely knocking the shit out of me. And I was just being tossed around by giants, and I couldn't process where the sky should be or where the ground was supposed to be. I was hyperventilating. I was sweating. And on top of all that, when we finally got down, because of the delay with the flight, I was going to miss my connecting flight. And I just started to sob. I was so sick, and I just wanted to be home. It had been one of the worst trips that I've ever been on in my life. And Charlotte is like a 35-minute flight from Chattanooga. Like, you take off and then you come back down and that's it. You're home. That's all it was. But if I had to stay in the Charlotte airport for a layover and trying to get on another flight and stuff, oh my God, I was going to die from the vertigo. I really thought I was going to die. And I was texting my mom, even though I could hardly look at the phone screen. And she was texting me back saying, ask to get off the plane first. And they had done this on a previous flight into Chicago a few days earlier for people who were missing a connection to LA. And I remember the flight attendants came on and asked if everyone would step aside and let a couple of people off the plane that they needed to really run to make their connection. So I asked this flight attendant who was seated near me at an emergency exit if they could do that for me. No, sorry, we don't do anything like that. And I was like, bitch, I mean, the speed with which she gave up helping me or sort of dismissed the thought of helping me made me want to scream at her. I might have, if I felt better, I probably would have, you know, fought about it or something. I don't know, or challenged her, but I probably looked like a crazy person. And maybe that's, you know, I was like sobbing and sweating and like, my eyes were rolling around in my head. She probably just did not want to deal with me. And another passenger who was kind of overhearing what I was talking about told me, she said, hey, you know, when you get off, tell the gate agent to call ahead and let them know that you're running for the plane and they won't, you know, pull away yet. They'll wait for you. And according to the time, you know, my plane was definitely already boarding. So I asked, nope. Gate agents had no idea what I was talking about. They don't make calls like that. And, you know, that wasn't really up to them. That wasn't something they could do. I was like, started talking to my guides, and my distinct thought was like, okay, fine. These people are not going to help me. I cannot manifest the people here in 3D who can help me. So you guys, I need you to do it somehow. Let someone know. Let someone know I'm close and just make them wait for me. And then I took off running. With vertigo, I'm running, wearing a heavy winter coat, carrying a suitcase and a carry-on. So I'm carrying two pieces of luggage. Now, without the vertigo, it would have sounded like one of the workouts of the day that we might do in CrossFit. And I thought, okay, it's running with a burden. You know, this is something I do. It's maybe a quarter of a mile to a half a mile at worst. I do stuff like this. I can do this. It was like three concourses away. I think I ran maybe 36 gates plus like some, you know, areas where there were like food courts and, you know, intersection areas. It was hell. It was not a cool scene in a movie. I don't know how I did it. I got there a good 35 minutes after the boarding should have started, and it was like 7 minutes after the flight should have taken off. I ran up to this gate agent. I was covered in sweat, and I blurted out Chattanooga and my flight number, and she sort of apologized and mumbled and kind of motioned toward this crowd of people. And all of the people who should have boarded the flight to Chattanooga, I guess, had clustered around the gate. They had like sort of rushed the gate like in anticipation of having the groups called to get on, but they weren't being allowed through. And one of the other passengers said to me, they can't get in touch with the plane. And I was like, what? They're not letting us on. We don't know why. We've been standing here for half an hour. And then we heard an announcement over the PA from the, you know, the gate agent, their little speaker for that area. And they said that they were still unable to contact the pilot by radio. The plane wasn't answering their calls. And then a few minutes later, like this was all within 3 minutes of me getting there, the plane's first officer, I think that's what they called him. I remember thinking, well, that can't be right. That sounds like very Star Trek. Maybe he was a co-pilot. I don't know. Are there first officers on commercial airplanes? This guy in a uniform came running down the gangway, like totally out of breath. He came running down this gangway and then down this hall, and we could see him coming. It was like this gate was like this really long thing, even once they let you through. And we could hear everything that he said to the gate agents. They were like, you know, 5 feet away. And he told them that they'd been trying to radio the gate for over half an hour. They kept trying to contact the gate to tell them that we could board. And no one ever answered. The signal wasn't going through. They were completely unable to communicate with the gate agents, and nobody knew why. They said they could talk to the tower. They just couldn't get in touch with the gate. The plane was out on the tarmac, too. It wasn't close to the airport. It wasn't attached to a gangway or whatever you call those hallway things. The pilot had finally sent this guy from the plane to physically run across the tarmac, go inside the airport, get us, and tell us we could get on the plane. So we had to walk even farther. It was a damn hike, and I thought I was going to die. I was still dizzy through all this, covered in sweat, dressed for Chicago temperature, and carrying luggage. And the flight attendants and the other passengers talked about this communications glitch the entire time we were boarding. They talked about it after we were seated. The flight attendants kept getting into conversations with each other and the passengers about it. They're like, nothing like that ever happens. No one could hear us. It went on for like over 30 minutes. No, it's fine. The moment you guys got on the plane, we can call the gate now. It's just fine. Ha ha, laugh, laugh. Weirdest thing ever. They held it for me. Who, I don't know who or how, through my haze of sickness and misery, I was just whispering, thank you. Thank you. I knew that whoever I was talking to, whoever it is that protects me, my parking angels, they blocked that call. They kept that plane from boarding until I got there. And I know the girl sitting next to me was like, this dude is crazy, because she could hear me muttering, talking to my guides. She was giving me some serious side eye throughout the whole flight because I still had vertigo. I was like clutching, holding on to the seat in front of me to try to brace myself so that I wouldn't be moving around so much. And the takeoff was hell again. And the landing was hell again. But I made it home, and my mother, who suffers from vertigo, was waiting for me at the airport with meclizine in hand. Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, transcripts, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or whatever app you prefer. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or a concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. There's an idea that has captured your attention, or it's about to make itself known to you. It may be a really big idea, a grand vision. You may only have an inkling of what it is and what you're supposed to do with it, and it may seem at this moment to be a bit too big. Know this, it is possible. You are definitely supposed to open yourself up to it. And I'll talk to you later.